from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, the University of California has undergone some major changes in leadership this summer. In early August, UC Davis Chancellor Linda Cattahy left her post after an investigation into the university's misuse of public funds. A week later, UC Berkeley Chancellor Nicholas Dirks resigned amid controversy over how the campus responded to sexual harassment cases. In this hour of Forum ahead, UC President Janet Napolitano joins us to discuss the recent leadership shakeup and the state of the UC system. Join us for Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. 3 years ago, in September 2013, Janet Napolitano took over as president of the University of California. Prior to taking that position, she served as both attorney general and governor of Arizona, and before resigning to head up the UC system as U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security. And we welcome her back to the Forum program. She joins us in studio this hour. Good to see you again. Welcome.
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I was saying to President Napolitano before we went on the air that 3 years ago we were talking mainly about immigration and undocumented students, and also concern that was raised about her not having enough of a CV when it comes to work in academia. Those things have come, well, the immigration issue hasn't receded, but they've been kind of overshadowed now by questions about chancellors because we've had two resignations recently. And I want to get into all of this with you. I guess let's begin, though, by just talking about the Dirks resignation, because in many people's minds, it still remains somewhat of a mystery. I mean, he was certainly losing support among the faculty. I'm talking about Nicholas Dirks at UC Berkeley, of course. But at the same time, the obvious question was there pushing for resignation, or did he decide to resign completely, utterly on his own?
No, I think Chancellor Dirks decided it was a personal decision that the campus would be better served with new and fresh leadership, that he would stay on during the pendency of the search to implement the budget reforms that we've decided upon, and also to work with many of those who are generous donors to the campus. So we've got a good plan. We have and we'll conduct a national search, and we will make sure that Berkeley continues to be the leading public research university in the world.
I want to talk about the whole search for chancellors and the process of deciding on a chancellor, but you often hear the argument, you're talking about work with donors, and Dirks did very well on that score, I mean, in
very
terms
well.
Of fundraising. Is there too – people say maybe there's too much emphasis on fundraising, that a chancellor needs to do other work and needs to pay attention to other things and has too much of the onus of being a major fundraiser.
Well, I think in the modern era, fundraising is important to make sure that the university has the revenue, the resources that it needs to do its work. And historically, public universities could rely on state funding with a little bit of tuition. That model no longer exists. And so there will be an increased emphasis on philanthropy.
You mentioned the fact that when you came aboard, and by the way, I guess after 3 years, you're coming up on an anniversary. Congratulations, getting acclimated to this job.
There you go.
But there was all this, well, she didn't have university experience. You know, yeah, she ran Homeland Security, and she, since she was chief executive of the state of Arizona, but, you know, she should have. I'm wondering what your thoughts are now in light of these two resignations, and I want to talk about the Cattahy resignation as well with you. There are many who are saying you should be looking at the private sector more, that perhaps both Cattahy and Dirks were really good scholars. Maybe Dirks good on fundraising, Cattahy good on fundraising, but maybe we need somebody who comes outside of the university realm.
Well, there's a very well-established search process. I've actually done two chancellor searches during my tenure, the chancellor at UCSF and the chancellor at UC Irvine. It's a very inclusive process. We want to hear from all elements of the campus community. Academic bona fides are important, but you also need someone with a track record in leading public organizations. And I say public because I think coming from the private corporate world, you'd really have to look at whether the person can adjust to being in a public setting where
Janet Napolitano has adjusted.
Where every communication is disclosable and public, and where all of your board meetings are public, et cetera.
Actually, speaking about disclosing, there's a, not to get off the subject, but just for a moment, there's been some buzz that maybe if Hillary Clinton becomes president of the United States, you might be a serious choice for attorney general.
Well, that's a compliment, but I'll tell you, I'm entering into my I'll be a senior this year. So it'll be my fourth year as the president of the University of California. And that's what I'm interested in doing.
You like to stay where you are?
I do.
You do? Okay. Let's talk, though, about the chancellor's job. But before we do, we had Eloy Ortiz Oakley on yesterday, who is chancellor of He'll begin his duties in December, chancellor of the community colleges. And he was talking about the importance of building bridges. And he had some ideas along those lines between the community colleges and the UCs. Where do you want to go with that?
Right. We've really been emphasizing transfer pathways. And we, with the leadership actually of our faculty, came together. We now have 21 pathways. These are what is a pathway? It is if you take these courses during your time at community college and you get admitted to the University of California, all of those courses will transfer to that major at that campus, whichever campus it is. So you really start as a true junior. And, you know, our goal is basically to have a 2-to-1 ratio on freshmen versus transfer students. That's what's contemplated in the master plan. We're just about there right now.
We are talking with Janet Napolitano, president of the University of California and former U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security. By the way, she held that position from 2009 to 2013 when she took over as president of the University of California. Let's talk about the chancellor process. But before we do, Governor Brown has on a number of occasions intimated that he thinks the UCs are elitist and maybe out of touch and all of that sort of thing. We don't have to go into chapter and verse here. But we've seen recently a couple of chancellors who seem to have resigned out of a kind of tone deafness, I suppose, is one way of putting it. Tone deaf to sexual harassment on the one hand, or at least so it was alleged and exposed by the press, or for that matter, hiring expensive PR people to come in and do a job to promote reputation or to get them into the big donors' eyesights. As far as Linda Cattei was concerned, getting rid of negative information on the internet. What this suggests to many people is you have a couple of chancellors who were simply out of touch, literally out of touch, and maybe tone deaf as well. How can that be avoided? You don't have to come down and render a judgment here, but
yeah.
How can we avoid not only the public perception of that, which may be valid in itself, but also in the process of choosing new chancellors?
Well, I think the resignations of Chancellor Cattahi at Davis and Chancellor Dirks at Berkeley are very different.
Indeed.
And I want to make sure we don't conflate them. You know, you have to, you know, it depends on not only what a person looks like on paper, but what you can perceive of that person, meeting them, talking with them, talking with others who have worked with them, and making your best possible judgment as to whether this particular candidate can serve as a chancellor of a UC campus. Not everybody can serve as a chancellor. It's a fairly narrow market for people who can really handle these jobs.
Is there going to be more or different kinds of ways of making that decision? For example, more student involvement in the selection of chancellors?
There's already substantial student involvement. So we do a full day on the campus. It's an open comment day. We have student representatives on the committee. So I think that we will listen carefully to students, faculty and staff.
You, as president and leader of the system, certainly have a lot to do with shaping how chancellors are going to not only be selected, but how they're going to comport themselves. What are you going to say to the next chancellor, for example, of UC Berkeley or UC Davis, about building up trust within the community, which is really crucial now?
Well,
I think with the faculty and students as well.
Absolutely. And to me, one of the most important things a chancellor can do when he or she takes over is to invest time on campus, meeting, talking, listening before taking on major new initiatives and the like. Get your sea legs, figure it out. The Office of the President, which is my office, will do everything we can to support these new chancellors.
There's still a lot of criticism about executive compensation being too high. Can I get you on the record on that subject?
I can understand the criticism and the concern. I would say, as I mentioned, there's a market, and we compete for the best leaders we can get, and salary is a part of that. And so I understand the public's desire not to pay high salaries for these positions, but I also understand the public's desire to have a great university.
So executive compensation may not be in the works as far as changing or altering or diminishing particularly?
Yeah, I'm going to – we'll see how the search process goes and what it reveals.
We're talking with Janet Napolitano. I'm going to bring you, our listeners, into this discussion. I know many of you have questions for the president of the University of California, and we welcome them or comments. In fact, let me give you the phone number now to call. It's 866-733-6786. You can join us at that phone number, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite in or outside of California. Feel free to join the program. Again, toll free, 866-733-6786. You're also welcome to email us. forum@kqed.org is our email address. And you can also post any questions or comments you have immediately onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. President Napolitano, you've got a 5,000 undergrad enrollment expansion this fall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in response essentially to about $25 million offer that carried with it well, I'm thinking about the state budget last year. It carries with it some big problems, particularly in terms of housing and what to do about mm-hmm. really finding the housing. I mean, Berkeley is a perfect example of that and so forth. What's being done?
A lot. We have an initiative underway to add 14,000 more beds for undergraduate and graduate students. We're going to do it in a different way. We're not going to be using our own debt capacity to build housing. We're going to be doing public-private partnerships for housing so that we can reserve our debt capacity for things like classrooms and laboratories, which either need renovation or we need to add them. So it is pedal to the metal right now because we have added, it'll actually be more than 5,000 California students this year, and we anticipate adding another 2,500 next year and 2,500 the year thereafter.
We still have a problem that's being ameliorated to some degree with food insecurity, but I think maybe is it safe to say there's more housing insecurity?
Yeah, I think so. We have food pantries at all our campuses, and I've distributed some funds to help with food insecurity issues. I think right now in terms of kind of big dollar issues, housing is where it's at.
Now, the CSUs are counting homeless students. Is UC going to do that?
I don't know what CSU is doing on homeless students.
They're going to count them essentially as part of the enrollment and, try to essentially account for them as best they can.
Well, I would have to say that this is something that really hasn't been brought to my attention. So I can't comment on that, except that if a student is enrolled, a student is enrolled. That's how we count students. So.
A lot of people want to talk to you. I want to go to our calls and emails. Before I do, though, you're going to have a cap on non-residents, as you've sort of been dangled and lured to do by the state?
So we actually have the last 2 years held flat the out-of-state student percentage at Berkeley and UCLA and San Diego. And those are the three campuses most in demand for that purpose. We've still added out-of-state students at our other campuses. And frankly, we've already continued to meet and exceed our requirements under California's Master Plan for Higher Education, which is taking the top 12.5%. We've actually exceeded that. Out-of-state students add diversity to the student body, they actually add revenue for the student body. So,
well, speaking of adding revenue, does this mean you get the $18.5 million? Have you reached the cap? Are you there yet?
We'll work on it. The regents will take up a policy on out-of-state students in January.
The promise is there, though. You meet the cap, you get the $18.5 million, right?
Yeah, it's a policy. I wouldn't say a cap, but it's a policy.
Okay. We'll go to our calls, and again, we're talking with Jenna Napolitano, president of the University of California. You are welcome to join us not only by phone, although all the lines are occupied. The number again is 866-733-6786, or email any questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. First caller up, Jill, you're on the air. Morning.
Morning. Hi, I'm a PhD student from UC Berkeley. Our department has been dealing with a sexual harassment case for the last 2 years, and I'm just wondering why it hasn't been resolved. 2 years seems like an awfully long time to be shuffled from committee to committee.
Sexual harassment, she's saying, essentially is moving too slowly, committee to committee, not enough done. Your thoughts?
Well, actually, quite a bit has been done. We've instituted a totally new framework for handling these cases where students are concerned, also to ensure that the sanctions are appropriate. We have just announced new rules and policies for faculty and staff. So there is just a lot going on in this area. And right now, with all the incoming students, we're focused on prevention and training. I think that handling these cases is very important. Preventing them, actually, would be my goal.
I'm going to go to more callers in a moment, but I'm looking at a tweet here from Linda who says, why are there free speech zones when the entire country is a free speech zone?
This is actually a hot issue in higher education these days, having so-called safe spaces and trigger warnings where speech is concerned. Clark Kerr had a great line. Clark Kerr, of course, is kind of the George Washington of the University of California. And his view was that universities should be safe spaces for ideas, not necessarily safe spaces in that regard for students. Students need to be challenged, and that's our mission, is to challenge and debate and to think and to expose students to new ideas and differing opinions.
Presumably that does not mean shouting down a speaker who may be saying things that are odious or unacceptable to certain interests?
Well, my view is we want students to be thoughtful, to be civil, and to be resilient. And that's all part of the education process.
You know, there's a tradition at Berkeley. We did an event together, you may recall, with the Secretary of the Interior. And my historical memory goes all the way back to Jean Kirkpatrick. There were attempts to really shout people down who were speaking, and it was sort of like
that.
Yeah, and it was sort of like, well, that's Berkeley. You know, in other words, it's almost pro forma at this point. You acknowledge it and you move on.
Yes, and you know, I think it in a way it's unfortunate because when you're shouting, you're not listening. And when you're shouting, you're not persuading. But nonetheless, these are lively campuses. There's a lot of energy. There's a lot of differing opinions. And so we can expect that kind of thing.
Ben wants to know, what's the president doing to reduce the cost to individual students?
Everything we can. We've held tuition for in-state students flat. This will be the sixth straight year. We've agreed with the governor that should tuition need to be raised, we would peg that to the rate of inflation so we avoid big spikes. We have very extensive financial aid. In fact, students who come from families that make less than $80,000 a year pay no tuition or fees at the University of California. And that equates to almost half our student body. So now I'm turning my attention to things like housing because it's not only tuition we need to be worried about, but the total cost of attendance.
Again, we're talking to President Janet Napolitano, and Ryan joins us. Ryan, welcome.
Hi, how are you? I just wanted, it's actually kind of funny because my topic was also going to be free speech, but I'm really happy to hear what Janet Napolitano was saying about it. I just wanted to maybe make a comment that currently UCSD is under suit from the ACLU for banning a student publication called The Koala from its campus, or at least getting rid of all of its funding. And so I basically would just like to hope that we can encourage free speech to remain open on campus. Anyway, thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks for the comment, and I agree. And as I was just mentioning, these are lively campuses with lots of very intelligent students, and the free speech is alive and well.
And thank you for the call, Ryan. On we go to another caller, Liam. Liam, you're on.
Hi. My question is about, I think in this country, we should have a bigger national discussion about how we fund our universities and public institutions, and it really should be the forefront of political discussion. And I was wondering if you had any points to keep in mind when having a national discussion, so not just with the University of California and California institutions, but as a nation as a whole. And then lastly, was wondering if you would even consider serving in a Clinton administration should she get elected. Thank you for taking the call.
I think she's already answered that last question. But
yeah, no. I think we should have a national discussion about higher education. You know, part of the political season this year was a big and is a debate about income inequality in our country, which I think is a huge issue. But the one tried and true tactic in American history that has worked is accessibility or access to public higher education. And California is fortunate because it invested early in having a great university system like UC. Now the challenge is to keep it going.
Again, we're talking to Janet Napolitano, president of the University of California. If you have something you'd like to ask of the president or a comment you'd like to make, you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. We'll continue hearing from more of you when we return. Brief break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Our guest this hour is President Janet Napolitano, who is president of the University of California. And we welcome your involvement in the program. If you'd like to join us, you can do so by calling us at 866-733-6786 or emailing us forum@kqed.org or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweeting us. Our Twitter handle is @kqedforum. I was saying to President Napolitano when we were off the air that a lot of the criticism about the resignation of Nicholas Dirks in the wake of sexual harassment furor is a good way to describe it, had to do with what was perceived as maybe either an old boys club or too much collegial concern about what could happen. In other words, it wasn't punitive enough, it wasn't appropriately punitive enough, and therefore, again, the argument goes maybe the problem is bringing people from the inside as opposed to looking to the outside if the chancellor's job ought to require?
I don't think I'd agree with that. What I would say, however, is that sexual harassment has been tolerated for far too long in academia generally, in many professions. We wanted to have a a new look, a stronger look. We wanted to make sure that we focused on prevention, but also when cases were substantiated, that the sanctions were appropriate.
It's a question from a listener who says, sort of a statement, but really a question. Seems like the job of the chancellor needs to be too many things at once. On the one hand, a private fundraiser at a massive scale. And on the other hand, the leader of a major public institution. Is it possible that these two roles are impossible to find in a single person to do well?
Oh, it's not impossible. We have great chancellors throughout the system and have had strong chancellors. But as the questioner suggests, you've really got to look because these are challenging jobs and challenging times.
A couple of questions about money I want to go to before I go to more calls. RJ tweets, are UC employee pensions safe going forward?
Yes, they are safe, and we are on track for funding part of the liability that was unfunded, but the pension is very secure.
And speaking about funding, another listener wants to know, which, in your opinion, does the UC need to do to restore or at least increase state funding, and what can individuals do?
I would say individuals should be talking with state legislators. This year, the legislature did provide additional monies in a number of areas, and we're very thankful for that. But the key issue we need is full funding for what it takes to enroll a new student at the University of California.
And we go to more of your calls. Let me go next to Rob. Welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you, and it's an honor to speak to Ms. Napolitano. A question about money, and you know, I'm not naive enough to think that money is not a very important part of, you know, the administration and the chancellor. But it seems like the perception is that the amount of money that gets paid out to the top administration at the UC system or for a lot of other education systems, the percentage has gotten greater than the total budget for the university. And I keep hearing that these people have to be paid really well to attract the best and the brightest. And one of their primary functions is to raise funds. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. But do we not end up attracting people whose primary interest may be in the money and not serving, you know, education as a whole? Because look at how much money these people get paid, not only their salary, but their housing allowance and all these other things. And, you know, some of them don't do a good job, some of them do, but it takes away from the student, from the students.
And right, Rob, I think what you're talking about is just the importance of commitment over finances and that sort of thing. And let's hear what the president has to say.
So what I'm looking for in a chancellor is someone who has that calling for public higher education. As I mentioned earlier in our conversation today, this is the one tried and true tactic for resolving issues of income inequality and helping people improve their lives, their families' lives, and the lives in the community. So that calling and then the ability to operate and to lead in a public setting are the kind of key features of a chancellor. And yes, we ask our chancellors to do a lot of things simultaneously. They are multitaskers. I'm very confident that we will be providing good leadership for the UCs.
How do you determine that factor? It's hard to read. I mean, Nicholas Dirks, for example, was criticized for becoming much too inaccessible, building maybe for security purposes too, but literally building a fence around the house that he was living in rent-free and so forth. The idea being accessibility versus, well, kind of impervious to the notion of accessibility.
Well, as we go through the search, you know, there's – you know, how a person looks on paper, then how they...
You can look awfully good on paper.
You can look awfully good on paper, and that's why the interviews are so very important and the reference checks are so very important. And then you make the best decision you can with the candidates who have been discovered.
You make it sound like really any kind of personnel decision. I mean, you know, when we're hiring producers or something like that, it's the same kind of mix, really. But this is a job that carries so much else with it, as we've been saying.
That's right. So, but the steps you go through are very similar to any personnel decision. What's different is finding people and retaining people who can do all of these activities at an A-plus level.
Rebecca wants to know, what does President Napolitano have to say about the adjunctification of faculty and academic labor at both UC and higher ed in general? I'm not sure what adjunctification, maybe adjudification. Or...
No, it's adjunctification. What she's talking about,
it is the... adjuncts.
That's what
hiring
it is. She's talking about adjunct professors, those who are not so-called ladder-rank faculty. And ladder-rank means they're on the tenure track. We are doing some of that, no doubt. Higher education in general is doing some of that, no doubt. However... These campuses are great teaching and research institutions, and so we're very cognizant of and sensitive to making sure we have the right mix of faculty for our students.
And this job is a great learning experience for me because I've got a pretty good vocabulary, but I never heard the word adjunctification before.
Yeah.
Here's Eric, who writes, I was a student during the 2008 economic collapse, and during that time, tuition was raised drastically. This forced me to take out private loans that have become a huge strain on my postgraduate life. Will there be anything done to protect students from this happening in the future?
Exactly. And that's why a couple of years ago, when we were in a pretty big and public budget tussle with the governor, one of my goals was to reach a multi-year agreement and so that we would avoid these drastic tuition spikes such as the ones that happened in 2008, 2009.
I would have loved to have seen that tussle between you and Jerry Brown because you have two tough governors going head-to-head, and they should have had a video of it. It should have been on C-SPAN or something like that. Get into student debt with you, though, because it continues to loom over so many students' lives, and it became a big issue when Bernie Sanders was trying to get the nomination. It's still a big issue. In fact, you know, the argument is that Hillary Clinton has moved more to the left on this issue. But where do you see this going?
Well, there's the national issue of student debt, then there's the UC.
Let's talk about
situation.
It with UC.
So UC is actually in a very different position. Most of our students graduate with no debt after 4 years at the University of California. Those who graduate with debt, the average is just about $20,000 for the entire 4 years. Well, that's a medium-priced car, unlike a car, which depreciates in value the moment you drive it off the lot. A college degree, like a UC degree, appreciates over a lifetime. Where I see student debt as a big issue is in graduate school and professional school. We have too many students at that level who are graduating with six-figure debt, and that is a problem. So
what to do about it?
Well, for example, we are the doctor educators for California, the MD educators. We need at the federal level to increase the amount of funding for graduate medical education. The country needs more doctors. We want to supply them. But we want to supply doctors who will go into lower income areas, into rural areas, into family and primary care practice as opposed to high-end specialties. And the incentive structure and the huge debt so many of our medical students graduate with, those incentives just don't align.
Let me bring more callers on here. Before, though, you just reminded me, speaking about medical education, have you taken a stand on the building of an arena?
Here down at across in Mission Bay. Yes, I think the chancellor struck a very good agreement, and that our interests in terms of accessibility to the hospital and to the research facilities that we've opened there, that accessibility is protected. So I'm very confident in what the chancellor has done.
More of your calls. Jason, you're on.
Hi, this is Jason Rabinowitz with the Teamsters. Hi, Janet.
Hey, Jason.
Janet, we represent 14,000 workers at the University of California that work hard every day to make the university work. And UC is one of the largest employers and a key economic force in the state, but it's failing in its mission to create good jobs in the community. Our members' real pay is down 24% over the last two decades, to the point where 93% of them are paid too little to afford basic necessities of life. And we're in bargaining, and UC's only offered 1.5%. That's not even enough to keep up with inflation. In the meantime, executive pay is skyrocketing, tuition is skyrocketing. UC's failing in its mission to serve the public. So my question, Janet, is when is UC going to pay workers enough to live?
Well, Jason, as you know, we're going to disagree on a few of the characterizations that you made in your comments here. But as you also know, we instituted our own minimum wage plan 2 years ago, moving to $15 per hour. We did that voluntarily. Nobody asked us to do it. I just thought it was the right thing to do. We are in bargaining with Teamsters now. I think you guys came in with something like 7.5% or 8%. So you were kind of on the high end of things, given the economic realities of the university. So let's get to the bargaining table. Let's have a good discussion. Let's be frank and honest with each other and see if we can get a deal.
And Jason, I thank you for the call. Do you enjoy that kind of negotiation, bargaining table stuff, like you just mentioned?
Well, I don't get to do it. I mean, other people get to
sit
at the table.
Of it,
but, you know, I think we want to make sure that our workers are treated fairly and compensated fairly. But we have to do it within the context of the budget that we have. And in the end, that budget has to balance.
I mentioned Chancellor Oakley was on yesterday, incoming in December, Chancellor of the Community Colleges. He had a 2% raise, and he said, well, I'll put it back in the kitty here, so to speak. He also is making less now as chancellor than he is presently. He will make less as chancellor than he was making as president and superintendent of Long Beach. But I'm just wondering about this idea of, you know, if there's criticism of those with a lot of executive compensation, what about their perhaps putting it back in the kitty, so to speak?
Well, I have not taken a raise since I took this job. I'm more than fairly compensated. I think that this whole issue of executive compensation, it makes a great copy. It's always a good soundbite. It's a very, very infinite part of the overall budget of the University of California. In fact, the number of people in what are called the senior management group at the undergraduate campuses has actually gone down over the last few years. So I think what we really should be talking about is how do we support these institutions overall and not get overly focused upon something that's something like 0.001% of the budget.
And we go to more of your calls. Let me bring in a caller from San Mateo. Rachel, you're on.
Hi. Hi, how are you guys? I just had a comment regarding the hiring process of chancellors. I'm a former UC Davis alumni, go Aggies, and I was there under Linda Katehi. And I think that it's very important to bring up the idea and hopefully, you know, change the process. In the hiring process, you know, we make students who are running for president of the campus, you know, debate against each other, and we have a huge say in that. And I think that it's really important that students have more of a say in the hiring process because these chancellors are representing us, you know, when students are getting, you know, tear gassed on campus and things like that. And I think that it's incredibly important that we have way more of an active say in who is representing us and who we can turn to in, you know, times of crisis like that on campus.
You know, Rachel, that's an interesting point. I'm not sure that chancellors represent students They need to be actively engaged with students, as they need to be actively engaged with faculty and with staff. They need to lead. They need to help create a vision for the campus and be thinking both near-term and long-term, and then persuade the campus community that it's the right vision and this is where the campus needs to go. When you look for leadership, part of it will be seeing, well, what's the person's track record? What's that person's record of interacting with their colleagues, but with others as well? Personality. How do they present themselves?
Interpersonal skills.
Interpersonal skills. Thank you. All of that goes into the mix. We will, like I said, have a very inclusive process because lots of people want to say.
Rachel, thank you for the call. Here's Devin who writes, Ms. Napolitano, can you tell us a little bit about the program implemented to monitor all communication through UC servers?
Yes. I'm not sure I would agree with that characterization, but as a large institution with lots of records, et cetera, that need to be kept private, where we are continually subject to hacking and the like, we have instituted some IT security measures of a type common to large institutions who have sensitive records like banks, like hospitals, and the like. And that was in response to a major hack of the UCLA health system, which is just to send out the notices to all the people whose records were hacked was a several million dollar endeavor.
Again, our guest is Janet Napolitano, president of the University of California, and our next caller is AJ. Thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. My question is in regards to the women enrollment at the UCs in the science and engineering program. So considering the fact that, nationally, the enrollment for women in engineering programs is relatively low, what steps the UCs are taking to encourage and increase the women enrollment, especially the girls graduating from high school, to enroll, in the engineering majors. I mean, especially, the computer science and engineering majors. And also, is there any plan for increasing the ratio for women to men in those technical majors?
In the STEM fields, yeah, science, technology, engineering, math. Actually, it's interesting. There was, I think it was Fortune or Money Magazine, one of those came out recently, and San Diego was the number one campus in the country for women students in engineering, and I think Davis was in the top five. So we've made great strides in this area. We need to do more. One of the things we've been doing is conducting summer programs for girls in high school to interest them in the engineering fields, give them some good practical experience, so they can see the kinds of careers that they can have in engineering. So as I like to say, if Silicon Valley has a gender issue vis-a-vis the lack of women in the technical fields, the UC has the breadth, depth, and scale to help solve that problem.
Let me thank the caller and go to another question that's come up a number of times on this show. Most recently, Michael Roth wrote a book, who's president of Wesleyan College, about the lack of fostering the humanities and the arts. I mean, a lot of emphasis on STEM. Great that women are being, given more of an avenue there, and certainly a lot of emphasis on coding for young people learning coding and so forth. But as a result, there's been more shrinkage toward the humanities and the arts.
Right. And I must say that I share that concern. I believe that a well-educated person needs to be able to put things in historical context, should have exposure to fine literature, to music, to how to read a painting, all the rest. And so one of the things we are doing is really making sure that our students, as they go through their curriculum, have the opportunity to take those kinds of classes. And what that means is that in their so-called STEM majors, that we have the right number of required courses, but not overly so, so they can't take more in the humanities and the arts.
It's a pretty delicate balance, isn't it?
It is, and that's, you know, that is a function of the faculty and the campus to work out that balance. But I will just say that I share the view of the importance of this.
Let me find out if you share the view of the importance of something from Rick, a listener who writes, what are the chancellor's, he means the president's, thoughts about the entry letter for the University of Chicago? This is the entrance letter about against safe spaces, which read, quote, "Our commitment to academic freedom means that we do not support so-called trigger warnings. We do not cancel invited speakers because their topics might prove controversial. And we do not condone the creation of intellectual safe spaces where individuals can retreat from ideas and perspectives at odds with their own."
Right. This was a letter that was issued by the dean of students at the University of Chicago to the incoming freshmen. And it has caused a great deal of debate in higher education, as you might imagine. I go back to Clark Kerr, the George Washington of the University of California, and his view was that the university should be a safe place for ideas, not for students, not to be exposed to differing points of view and the like. To me, we want to educate our students to be thoughtful, to be civil and persuasive, and to be resilient, because when they graduate, they oftentimes will run into things with that are offensive, and I wish it were not so, but it is, and so they need to know how to handle it.
We bring more of our callers on. Let's go next to Ron. Ron, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Good morning. So, President Napolitano, I'm stuck on what's happening in Richmond here. The university was going to open some very large facilities, I guess, research oriented, and they made all kinds of land use planning decisions. There were properties that were going to go to other users at the university that they reserved for the university, and now the university is pulling the plug. What are you guys going to do to sort of fish or cut bait and help Richmond, out of the jam that they've been stuck in?
Well, I think what Berkeley has done is take a pause, and the reason they have done so is money.
It's a big budget deficit from construction.
That's right. And we want to, for the time being, we need to focus on the main campus and making sure that the students are getting the Berkeley education that they have strived for. It's very competitive, as you know, to get into Berkeley. We will no doubt need to revisit the Richmond situation. But for now, the focus, I think, is on the right place.
And let me thank Ron for the call, and we'll go right to another call, and that's Joe. Joe, you're on.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. President Napolitano, UC Davis has an associate vice chancellor earning $200,000 as part of student affairs that's pushed aside. And she negotiated that until she retires into a do-nothing job by Adela Della Torre, who then wanted to give part of her responsibilities to Emily Prieto at $50,000 raise. And this has happened before at Davis, where a botched termination, they get pushed aside, they get to negotiate their salaries. And I'm just wondering if that's going to be part of the follow-up investigation of what happened in the student affairs and Katehi's office.
Well, I think our focus at Davis now is on the chancellor search. I don't want to comment on any follow-up investigations or the like. I don't think it's appropriate at this time. But I will say that Davis is a strong campus. It's a resilient place. It continues to improve in its academic rankings, in its philanthropy, and in its public service activities. So I think my number one job is making sure we find a chancellor who's a good fit for Davis.
And Joe, I thank you for the call. Great minds thinking alike here. Amanda says, our engagement producer, good question, end on. And as soon as I saw it, I thought the same thing. Lynn writes, is your office open to ideas and opinions from California citizen stakeholders of the UC system? And if so, what is the best way to communicate with you?
Yes, we get lots of letters and communications, and I enjoy them. We try to be as responsive as we can when we do get communications, new ideas, and the like. We are in downtown Oakland. You can send us a letter or just go on our website, and that's probably the easiest thing to do.
Good to have you on. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Janet Napolitano, again, is president of the University of California. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. We're going to talk about the history of California labor in the hour up ahead. Fred Glass will be joining us. He's written a book, in fact, about California labor, going back really to indigenous labor and the taking us through the gold rush right up to microchips in the present day in Silicon Valley. So stay tuned for that. You can always continue this discussion online by going to kqed.org/forum. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, Susan Britton, and Jeremy Siegel. Our engineer is Howard Gelman. Engagement producer Amanda Stupai. And we get online support from Amanda Font. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our executive producer is Joanne Wallace. We thank you for listening. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.